Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, February 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Tamar Adler, the award-winning author of 3 books, with a new one coming this fall. Tamar is a contributing editor at Vogue, has been a New York Times Magazine columnist, and writes the Kitchen Shrink Culinary Advice column on Substack. Today, we're going to talk about finding happiness in the kitchen. Is it a happy place for you? Does it bring you the warm and the fuzzies and whatnot? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Tamar Adler, Food Friday, right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Tamar Adler. Tamar is the James Beard and IACP award-winning author of 3 books, including An Everlasting Meal Cookbook, which is a really cool encyclopedia of leftovers organized by leftover ingredient, thousands of ideas. It's a really, really great book. She has a new book coming out this fall entitled Feast on Your Life. Tamar is a contributing editor at Vogue, has been a New York Times Magazine columnist, writes the Kitchen Shrink Culinary Advice column on Substack, and apparently does live appearances with that moniker. She has cooked at Chez Panisse and lives in Hudson, New York. If you have a question today, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Tamar Adler, welcome back.
Thank you.
The year has gone by very quickly since your last appearance.
I've been counting down the days.
I love it that you're here. And, you know, so right before we went on, just now, you had mentioned that you do the Kitchen Shrink live at some farmers markets?
I do. It's my favorite thing to do, and it's slightly stressful.
I bet, but explain. You know, all I can think of is Lucy.
Yes.
You know, in the Charlie Brown cartoons. So you have a little booth, and then people come up and ask you questions.
That's exactly what it is.
Genius.
It's a red. It's a bright red Lucy stand that says the Kitchen Shrink is in, and then I can also turn the little tile to out. Although, actually, the stand was made by a few people, but it was painted by this great guy named Colin Packard. And instead of out, he just put Z's.
Like, oh, I like
for
it.
Snoozing.
Yeah.
So I set it up at farmers markets, but I once did it on Main Street in Catskill.
Oh, yeah.
I set up the stand and then I just sit at it and wait for people to come and ask for culinary advice. And I put a chair across from me.
Now, Lucy would ask for a nickel.
I asked for a nickel.
You ask for a nickel as well.
It even says 5 cents.
That's
a
good bargain.
But I've never been given a nickel. People either say they have no change and then I give advice for free, or people give me a dollar.
Okay, well, that's fair
enough. And once somebody gives me a dollar, I tell the next 19 people not to worry about it, which is not good business.
Yeah. No, it's not the best business model. Tamar Adler is our guest today. I was mentioning the Everlasting Meal Cookbook, which is so handy and so practical, but so beautifully written. It's a great book. You got a new one coming out, and it sort of ties in with our theme today. Tell us about it.
My next book is coming out next fall, and it's called Feast on Your Life. And I started writing it actually last January 1st. And the reason I started it was because earlier that fall, I just started feeling sort of terrible about everything. And my husband had given me the idea of starting a gratitude journal, which I had never done before. And I was like, yeah, does that really work? And I mean, of course, like anything that's prescribed that often, it totally works. And I started writing down, for a couple of weeks, I would just write, you know, 5 things I was grateful for every day. And then I was talking to my book agent about it, and she was like, well, how many of them are in the kitchen? And I was like, well, I mean, I'm always in the kitchen, so a lot. And then she said, well, why don't you just do it related to the kitchen? Because the kitchen is, I mean, everybody, especially this time of year, everybody is struggling with some kind of malaise.
And big time.
The kitchen is such a source of stress. And all of my other books have really been geared toward helping people, trying to help lift some of that stress in the kitchen. And
why do you think it's a source of stress?
Because we work really long hours, and it's really hard to find enough time to cook. And a lot of people haven't really learned the basics of cooking by the time they're suddenly, you know, working incredibly long weeks, yeah. as is their partner, and they've got kids to feed. And it's hard. It's hard even if you do know how to cook. I mean, it's hard and boring for me, and I'm a trained chef. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, if it's a challenge for me, then it's got to be that to the nth degree for just a regular person who hasn't turned out, you know, hundreds of meals a night. And so that idea that I would write down what made me happy in the kitchen became Feast on Your Life.
I think it's, to me, it's just fascinating that someone like you would find times when it's stressful to be in the kitchen. To me, and I was talking to Lucas Willard, who's one of our news guys here, our assistant news director, about this today. And he was complaining about this to some extent, that, you know, so you get a group of people over and everybody congregates in the kitchen. And I said, Lucas, this happens to everybody. The kitchen is the heart of the house, don't you think?
Definitely. I mean, I love when people congregate in the kitchen, but I wrote this in my book. We're always in the kitchen, and I think if we could have a bathtub in the kitchen, then we would maybe be able to get rid of the rest of the house. Everybody's just in the kitchen all the time, but as they should be. I love that. I think the times that I feel stress in the kitchen are when I just don't feel like doing it.
Right.
I mean, you know, like you think of all the times that like you just. Your legs are tired, or your arms are tired, or your brain is tired, or it's like your hands are cold. That happens to me a lot in the winter. I'm like, in order to cook, which I do every day, you know, I have my hands, which are already cold because it's really cold out, have to get wet like 25 times.
Yeah, oh, sure.
You know? And so it's like just those small things kind of accrue, and I'm like, I just don't want to. And so it really helped me to have the job, the obligation of writing down one kitchen happiness every day.
Are you the only one who cooks in the house?
Yeah. We have
on the calendar.
The calendar says that Pete cooks once a week. And that's sometimes true.
Okay.
But it, you know,
it's better than I do. And my wife is exhausted.
I gave you a cookbook last time we hung out.
Oh,
what
I gave it to
that?
My wife.
Don't
worry. She's got it. No, the thing is, I'm not very good. I'm not good. And, you know, if it's dad's choice, okay, kids, we're going to have some gourmet dining at Arby's, which I'm guessing you don't do.
We don't go out very much.
No, I don't either.
And we don't, or even if it's like a fast food place, honestly is cheaper to do it at home.
Oh, yeah.
And it tends to taste better. It's basic, you know? Like, there are lots of... I'm a great proponent of eggs for dinner and of, you know, eggs or pancakes or whatever.
Breakfast
but
for
I,
dinner,
I really feel like if you make it yourself, it tastes better. It's less expensive.
Yeah.
There's something reliable and comfortable about making it, even if it's really simple. But it still presents some hurdles.
We're joined today by Tamar Adler. The new book, which will be out in the fall, is entitled Feast on Your Life. And it's all about, I guess, sort of finding that happiness and the contentment in the kitchen. And you said you were a professional chef. So that's a stressful gig. I mean, it must be nothing when you're at home.
It's a different kind of stress. I mean, you know, when you're doing it in a restaurant, it is stressful, but you're pounding coffee and you've got a lot of adrenaline.
How much coffee do you drink?
When I was cooking?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I drank, it depends which restaurant, but like at Chez Panisse, I definitely would drink like an espresso every 2 hours, but until, you know, if it was a weekend, until midnight.
Well, okay.
So then afterwards, it's kind of hard to unwind.
This is why in my former life where I played music in bars and such, hanging with the restaurant folks late at night was always the craziest time.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the between midnight and 4 a.m. is like, you know, you're just drinking to try to kind of calm down a little bit. That's not what it's like to cook at home, obviously. And
no.
It is really easy compared to cooking in restaurants to cook at home. But there are so many other factors. You know, there's your kid who says they're going to eat something but then won't. And there's doing all of the dishes, you know, yourself, or even if your partner's doing it. There's the fact that it's embedded in your home, you know. So it's like this, it's a lot of, I guess I keep on using the word volatility, but it is. There are a lot of things. There are, you know, perishable food things and heat and cold and all this stuff embedded in your house. And it's, you know, I don't think you can cook your way around those things. Like, I think you miss out on too much of cooking if everything is pre-cut and if everything just goes into the microwave. And there's a lot of joy that you miss out on, but there's also a lot of sort of innate, it's dynamic, it's kinetic, it's changing, and that affects you.
You know, I think you brought up something very interesting. And by the way, we're talking to Tamar Adler about finding joy and contentment in the kitchen. It's 800-348-2551. You brought up the child. You only have one?
I only have one.
Excuse me. I have five. And so...
You have five?
Yeah. And so my wife does the cooking, but I'm the ombudsman. So, you know, one kid doesn't want it. Two other people want it. And then it's a negotiation, and it's a little difficult. I mean, we let it happen. I said years ago, I said, we'll tell them what they're going to eat, and they'll eat it or not. No.
Did that ever happen? Did you ever do that?
I've said to do it, but...
Right. But, like, was there a moment with a moment where you had a certain, like, you had the three of the oldest kids, or with just the oldest, or with just the fifth, where you actually said, this is just the way it is? Did anybody?
Very rarely. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. We got to hit a break here, and the number is 800-348-2551. On those very rare occasions when all five are all in on the dinner, that's when you play the lottery, because it's just so rare. You know what I mean? All right, Zach, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Tamar Adler today, and we'll get back to calls and whatnot in a moment. Seven Brothers, Give Me Some Scratch here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's fun to have Tamar Adler here. The Kitchen Shrink is with us. The new book, which will be out in the fall, Feast on Your Life. And we'll talk about finding happiness and contentment in the kitchen. It's very easy for me because I'm not allowed in the kitchen. But, all right, so give us one example of an entry in this book. So You told me beforehand that it's every day of the year.
It's every day. So it's going to be 365 moments of happiness.
Yeah.
And also what I was telling you right before was that I finished the book and was ready to turn it in. And then I went through to see if I had skipped any days. And it looks like there were 36 of the 365 days where joy was less available to me. So I'm going to have to go back and summon joy.
That's a good ratio, though.
I know.
It's a lot of joy.
It is. But I thought about just leaving those days out. But I feel like that, I don't even feel like that's honest, because I think there was joy on those days. And I can see where they are. And usually I was on a trip or sick or,
right.
You know. And so I do have, I had kept notes throughout of, you know, ones to write up. So I just have to go through and re-summon the bliss of that day. But I have the subject.
Now, when you were making these notes, did you, so if I open your book, it's August 14th, let's say, is that really what you thought on August 14th?
Or yeah.
You're just, really?
Yeah.
So you took notes while you were doing stuff.
Oh, yeah. And a friend actually asked me. When I was telling him about the book, a friend asked, well, do you know, how far ahead have you planned the entries? And I was just completely taken aback, because that would feel like such a betrayal to me.
Yeah.
It really mattered to me that I experienced the joy. And so there are even some entries, I'm curious to see what my editor does with these, but there are some entries where I clearly have to sort of write myself into it. And the beginning, you're like, ooh, where's this going? You know, it's like, gray day, very wet.
Oh, I love this.
Wet gray day.
So this sounds
certain there will be no joy today.
I love this. So there will be no, this is a food book with no recipes?
Maybe. I mean, I wrote one of the things that brought me joy was actually a memory. There are some memories. And usually I think the memories arose generally from a smell or seeing something or talking to somebody. But there was one year when I was a kid and I was, I don't know, 8 or 9, and I faked gastrointestinal distress like all the time.
Okay.
And everybody was too busy to call me out as a faker, which was probably why I kept on doing it. But that's the summer that I was writing about. I got this imaginary stomach pain was so extreme that I needed my grandmother to drive to Maine, where my parents had a summer camp. I decided the only thing I could eat was her paprika chicken. It's like an 8-year-old, which also had potatoes. And she drove from Long Island, where she lived, to Maine with this paprika chicken and served me a couple of meals, like lunch and dinner, and then packaged the rest of it up in little tinfoil packages. And for four or five days, I decided my ailment, like the characteristic of this stomach ailment, was that the only thing I could eat was my grandmother's paprika chicken. I'm trying to find a recipe that is exactly right for that.
And
you remember
funny?
The taste, this is sort of, I think, something that's quite interesting and beautiful about food is that my mom was a much better cook than my grandmother. My grandmother is notorious for not caring about food and not even being a good cook. But in this moment of like great childish extremis, her paprika chicken was the thing that symbolized.
And she drove
comfort.
It from the island
and she
all,
drove
all
from
the way,
to
depending
Maine.
On where in Maine, that's a 9-hour drive.
Well, probably unrefrigerated, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't sound super safe. It doesn't sound like a good idea at all, but it did heal me eventually.
It sounds like grandma to me, I'll tell you what. That's great.
Yeah.
We have an email here. And by the way, if you want to talk to Tamar Adler, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phones in a bit. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. Patrick in East Greenbush writes, growing up in the 60s, my stepmother had two small cast iron trivets in the kitchen wall. One said, no matter where I serve my guests, it seems they like my kitchen best. The other one said, the opinions expressed by the husband in this house are not necessarily those of the management.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, there's truth to that. you know, memories are I think about some of the things that I'll never be able to make that my grandmother made or that my mother made. And
like what?
There are things that I can't even pronounce that my grandmother made. And there's a German thing. It was and I've seen stuff online that are close. It was a baseball-sized, it had bread pieces in it. And it
like
had,
a dumpling, like a bread dumpling.
Yeah, and bacon, and she called it Brotles, but I have no idea. I've looked it up. All different spellings, and I can't find it. But very thin brown gravy on the top. Oh, yeah.
That sounds great. Okay, so like stale bread, cooked bacon, bound by egg, probably.
Probably.
Parsley?
No idea. I mean, it was 45 Milk. Or more years ago.
This is going to be my mission between now and the next time
really?
I come on the show.
I mean, one of the things she told me was that, you know, I'm sure this is true for all European countries, but, you know, the section of Germany that her family was from, they all had different names for things, and the spellings were different, and even to some extent the language is different. So good luck with that, Tamar Adler.
I mean, I think what I'm going to try to do is just find the recipes you talked about, like different versions of what people did with stale bread and pork, and see what the commonalities are. And probably everybody made it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But I imagine it was poached. I imagine people will say what it was poached in. you know?
Poached. What is that?
Yeah, like cooked the way, like the way you cook southern dumplings, cooked in just simmering liquid, so in broth. Like probably there was a broth and they were cooked, simmered in the broth, so they puffed up.
Yeah, yes. I think you're onto something there. In your book and in your life and through your life, what is the, I don't want to have a spoiler here in, for your book, but what's the best kitchen joy you can have?
It's having people at my table. I was so astonished, pleasantly surprised, and then kind of like annoyed with myself and kind of begrudging when I read through all the entries and realized that all the stuff that you say, that people say is true, is true. It's a little bit like the prescription of writing down what you're grateful for. It works. And so many of the really clear, honest joys are start with my feeling discouraged by something and then people gathering at my table. And it's so, you know, it's like I'm not, this book I think is very plainly written. Because
well,
you're
a phenomenal writer.
Thank you. Thank you. But it, I think because it's so plainly written and I think it's not very stylish, it's very sincere. And that means that I think you can kind of like smell the baloney from far away with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was really clear to me when I read, when I read the entries in which joy came from people sitting at my table, that the food is completely secondary. The meals are super simple. One of them, I don't even write what I served. And I think I wrote like a meal too simple to describe. Maybe it was grilled cheese. I don't even know. Maybe it was bread and butter. But the joy that really comes from just having that, having community at the table, and how long it lasts and how full it made me feel over the course of the last year was really annoying to me and really noticeable.
You know, I'm not a writer, and I, as our listeners know, I can barely read. So is it tough to be sincere?
No. It's just, it took a lot of, I think that I used to try to be a stylish writer, and then it was, well, I think that's easier, right? Because you can really write your way around what you're trying to say. I really wanted to have as direct a connection between the joy I was feeling and what people were reading with this book.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit, in reading it, now, it was the first read through, which was a couple months ago. The first read through that I did was a little bit painful because it wasn't hard to be sincere in the moment, but reading it was a little cringy.
What made you cringe?
Oh God, I'm just like, get over yourself. Like, so things would be super cheesy or so sentimental, or like, how many times are you going to use the word sturdy? Like, it just, my writing tics annoyed me.
But isn't that what an editor's for?
Yeah, I could. I mean, I would not show this to anybody. I think I've already used it as fire starter. but then there were parts where I almost felt like it was too vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like almost like this might be too soft a belly to show. You know, it was like very turtleish without its shell.
Yeah,
so
I
had
that
to. I didn't try to put the shell on, but there were moments that I wanted to I looked for a German word. Maybe you know what it is. I was wondering if there's a German word for the specific nausea that you experience at reading your own bad writing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if our new CEO, Sarah Gilbert, is still here, but she was a German major in college.
Okay, we'll ask her.
So if she's listening, she can pop in and tell you.
Okay. It's got to be in German, though. That is the language that will have this.
You're probably right. Well, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Tamar Adler's here. The book that comes out in the fall sounds absolutely like a fun read and a fascinating read. Feast on Your Life is the name of this. Who's the publisher?
Scribner.
Okay. So that's not a lightweight right there. All right. Let's go to the phones and Well, let's go to Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Hey, Tamara.
Hi.
This is Chris calling. Hey, I got a question for you, Tamara. Do you cook exotic desserts like passion fruits?
You know, I have never cooked with passion fruit. I do make mango and sticky rice, which is...
And papaya?
There's no papaya in that. It's a traditional Thai dessert where you steam sticky rice in coconut milk, sweetened coconut milk, and serve it with mango.
Have you tried papaya pancakes?
Papaya pancakes.
Those sound great.
Fascinating. Well, thank you, Chris. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Tamara Adler's our guest today. And let's see. We'll go to Williamstown. Okay, Williamstown, you're on.
Hi. My name is Nori. I'm part of a cooking class at my high school.
Okay.
And we are, like, totally reading off your book and doing recipes from An Everlasting Meal. And
that's amazing.
I wanted to say thank you. We have this whole class based off of Everlasting Meal.
That is so wonderful. If you guys ever want me to, like, zoom in for the class, send me a note on Instagram or something. That sounds really wonderful.
Cool.
Yes, we will. Totally.
Nori, let me ask you a question. When you're in high school? Or your teacher? Okay. What gives you joy in the kitchen?
I think what gives me joy is things that have, like, these textures that are, like, repetitive. Like rice, there's a thing of rice, and then there's another rice, and then there's another, or like couscous or spaghetti, where there's multiple spaghetti strands. And it's just so repetitive, and it's mesmerizing, and I love cooking with those and eating those.
I've never, ever thought of that, and I love that description of those foods. And I think that's probably a pleasure that we all get out of those foods, but I've never thought of them as repetitive. I think that's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Nori, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it very much. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. So, you know, are the joys in your 365 days or 329 that you have now, are they taste-related? Are they food-related? Or are they more process-related, as Nori was just talking about?
They run the gamut.
Yeah.
But I loved that one that Nori just said. I feel like I might need to eat rice and then, I don't know, go back in there and thank Nori for it.
Got a couple days
because,
to
like,
fill.
What a beautiful way of thinking about what we like about those. It's almost like their reliability.
Yeah.
You know? But I think repetitiveness was a really nice way to put it because it's usually used pejoratively. But I love that she was like, yeah, just that there's one and then another one and then another one. So they really run the gamut from a taste that I have to a taste that reminds me of a taste I'd had in the past to a poem that I read to a phrase or a description or a meal, you know, the experience of a meal. It's really everything. It's a lot of days.
It's a lot of days, and you're almost there. The number here is 800-348-2551. You know, again, I'm not a cook, but I was just thinking about the pleasure I take. The only thing I do is grill, so I'm pretty good at the grill. Just out there with the charcoal and the smoke and minding the fire, and there's a joy I get out of that.
Have you thought about what kind of joy it is or what part of it you like? Like, do you know what is it that you feel?
Well, I'm not that introspective, so I never really gave it that much thought. But I just love the whole vibe. Okay, Dad's cooking. I got meat on the grill, and it's, you know, the whole neighborhood smells great. So, I don't know. I think maybe it's just being outside, and it's primal to some extent.
And it's probably also an opportunity to provide, right? That you don't get that feeling often, where,
no,
like, you're the one who's filling the platter. And, like, when you're done with your job at the grill, the meal is cooked, and that's what everybody's eating.
A couple few years ago, we got a meat thermometer. It's up my game. I did it all very zen-like and yeah. Using the force. Having the meat thermometer really helps.
Really?
Yeah. Do you grill?
I cook all the ways. I do grill. I really take great pleasure in the zen, that the poking at the meat and like deciding when it's done based on some, yeah, the force.
Yeah.
I really like that. I like it too much to want. I think that I noticed in writing this book was that the more attention I paid, the more opportunities for pleasure there were. So that shortcuts didn't provide me.
Now, hold the phone. I was with you all the way through my life. You're telling me a chef, someone who has been around the block more than once, more than thrice, you don't use a meat thermometer?
No. I did use one, but I did use one. Hold on. I used one 2 weeks ago because I was making something, a cut that I don't normally make. So I guess the exception is when I'm doing something that is really new to me. I was making a lamb loin, and I was feeling I was just getting better from the horrible illness that we have all had. And, you know, lamb loin is really lean. There's nothing. It's like you really don't want to overcook that. And I was also really tired, and I was very clear on what I was going to do, which was salt it, oil it up, and then stick it in the oven. And that was just going to be it.
Yeah.
And I used a thermometer for that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, listen, I love having you on this show because it calms me down, too. You got a little thing going, Kitchen Shrink. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Tamar Adler's here. The book that'll be out in the fall is Feast on Your Life. We'll be back. Mannix, what a fine theme and a rock and rolling show, too. A lot of action, a lot of punching in the head and whatnot. That was a great show. And great music. Lalo Schifrin, 800-348-2551. Tamar Adler's here, a James Beard Award-winning author. And this email from Lana, and then we'll go back to the – well, we got a couple emails here. Please tell Tamar about a book she will absolutely love. And these are words I probably can't pronounce. The Kamigawa Food Detectives by Hisashi Kashiwe. It's available in English translation. Well, why don't you give me that instead? I found it at the library. Do you know this book?
Oh, no, I'm so excited.
I'm going to let you read it because I obviously butchered the pronunciation.
No, you didn't.
No.
The Kamigawa Food Detectives by Hisashi Kashiwai.
Okay.
This is so exciting. Thank you, Lana.
Okay.
It's almost all of my favorite words in one line there. Well, food and detectives. That's it. That's
okay. I was going to say.
It takes for me.
You're very easily
thank
amused.
Thank you.
All right. So you'll be checking that out. Let's see what else we got in the email bag here. This is from Jeff. Aha. I knew if I mentioned what I call brotglace, we'd get an email or two. Jeff writes, the dumplings to which you referred are called nedliki in Czech, a boiled bread dumpling, sometimes with stale bread and bacon, fried onions too, served with sauerkraut and roast duck or pork.
That's it.
Well, it's.
I mean, that's the idea. That's
exactly.
That's the family.
All right, let's go back to our phones here. 800-348-2551. Tamar Adler, the Kitchen Shrink, is with us. By the way, are you going to be out with your little stall and any time soon?
You know, the next time I do it will be probably in March or April.
Yeah.
At the Hudson Farmers Market.
Okay. But so you exclusively go to that one?
No. I would love to go to more. It requires my contacting the market organizers. But sometimes, when I did it on the street in Catskill, it was because a local art gallery wanted me to do it. I'll pop it up anywhere. I should do it on Central Avenue.
I think that maybe just think about that for a moment. No, I mean, there are good spots. I mean, you could definitely do it, but there's a lot of traffic and whatnot. You know, somebody should really be running a camera and do a short documentary on that, because that's such a cool idea. Now, do people ask for just recipe help, or do they say, listen, my husband's a pain in the backside, and I don't know how to cook, and he's yelling at me? And
I get such a wide variety. And they, like, one person asked me how she could refind joy in her kitchen.
Okay.
I wrote her a book. And then a couple asked me what to do with a duck egg that they'd been holding on to so long that it started to seem really special. So they couldn't just, like, scramble it.
What'd you tell
them? And then to serve it, to fry it so they could see the
yolk. How long do they keep it? Don't they go bad?
No, I mean, they're good for at least a month.
Okay. Unrefrigerated.
If they're not washed, unrefrigerated. If they're washed, refrigerated.
What does the washing do?
If they're not washed, when eggs are laid, they have a really amazing protective layer on them that is antibacterial.
I did not know this.
It's like part of the birthing process. They have to be, it's protection for everybody, right? Protection for the mother, protection for the chick. So they have this great antibacterial layer. That's why eggs aren't refrigerated in all of the EU. They just are unwashed.
Wow.
But we wash our eggs, so we have to refrigerate them because you remove the antibacterial layer.
Tamara Adler, I never heard this. I've been doing this show for years, and I never knew that. Well, thank you. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. And to Kingston, it's Lorraine. Hello, Lorraine.
Hello, Ray. Always enjoy your shows. And very much enjoying listening to Tamar. I just wanted to comment on the dumplings, another weigh in on the dumplings. My mother was German, and she used to make something. I have no claim to speaking German, but she called them Kartoffelkleist, and those were potato dumplings. So what you remembered, I think, is accurate. Just Brot is bread, and Brotkleist is potato dumplings.
Okay, fair
so
enough.
I just wanted to add my 2 cents.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it very much. There hasn't been this much German spoken on the show in a long time. I never learned it. I mean, my grandmother spoke only German for her first 15 years of life. And then by the time I knew her, she never spoke German except when castigating us. And my brother only knew swear words in German. That was his claim to fame.
Yeah. Did you learn those?
No, but I thought they were very entertaining to listen to.
Yeah,
but I know. It required too much ambition. Evan in Poughkeepsie. Evan, you're on.
Hey, good to be on the show. Really enjoying it. You know, my grandmother was my food inspiration, and they were from Eastern Europe. And I'm a recent grandfather.
Ah, congrats.
And, you know, food was her love language, and food is my love language. And so the thing I love most is, if I make something that I know is really wonderful and I give someone and they try it, the look on their face after they eat that bite, when you know they're transformed because something is amazing, that is the high point of my day, you know?
Mm. That's so wonderful.
That's what I love, what I live for.
And do you feel like that sort of drives you back to the kitchen, remembering how good it feels when you see that look on somebody's face?
Oh, absolutely. And to be able to share, because, you know, food is my love language. So it's the way I express love and caring for people. And the other thing that I'm going to say is only cook when you want to be cooking. Mm. Don't do it if you don't want to do it. There's so much good, easy to make, high quality food for the times you don't feel like cooking.
Evan,
just keep it special.
The trick, I think, and Tamara and I were talking about this, is, you know, if there is responsibility here. And so one of the tricks that I'm learning from Tamara is finding that spark of contentment when you have to do it anyway.
I've also...
Everyone's different, but I found really good food co-op and health food store, easy to make foods my kids loved. When I didn't feel like cooking, I taught them how to make a uncured hot dog or an organic burrito in the microwave, and I only cooked when I really wanted to cook, and it was always a source of joy for me.
Okay.
Well, everyone ate well, Tamar, but that's how
that
I kept my
great
joy level high.
Okay. Tamar, you want to comment on that at all? Or?
Well, I will only say that does sound great, and it's so wonderful that you've been able to keep that source of joy and keep it sort of whole and complete. I have found, luckily, in writing this book that lots of times I could start cooking when I wasn't in the mood to, and then in the middle of it realize that I was experiencing a great pleasure in something that I never would have come into contact with if I hadn't started cooking. You know, that I'd be really relishing the smell of fresh garlic, or how fresh garlic, if it's well cured, slices and has, it's almost like a really ripe pear, and that I wouldn't have had that sensory experience if I hadn't sort of had to stand up and get myself to the burners. So I think that there are wonderful, I guess the upshot is, right, there are ways to preserve the way you find pleasure in it. And, you know, thank God there are ways to find pleasure even when you are sort of doing not exactly what you want to be doing.
Evan, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Evan mentioned microwave.
Yeah.
Are there any days in your book that mention a microwave?
I don't have one.
You don't have one?
I don't have one.
God bless you,
but,
Tamar Adler.
Hold this. Okay. But lest I sound sanctimonious, I was, a couple of months ago, I was in California with my dear friend whose mom, Gita, is one of the best South Indian cooks I've ever, I mean, certainly the best South Indian cook I know, and makes some of the best South Indian food I've ever had. And she, in the midst, and she makes everything, you know, from scratch. There are no, like, spice mixtures. She would never, like, buy sambar powder or garam masala. She makes each of the things and always starts with whole spices, toast them, grind them. It's all,
yeah,
every single thing is from scratch. And completely nonchalantly and without any kind of conversation about it, she microwaved each of the vegetables. It's South Indian, so there is no meat and there's no, it's just cow milk. No eggs.
Right.
Just vegetables and cow milk. And she microwaved all the vegetables before putting them into each of the dishes, the curries. And I was like, wait, Gita, do you always do this? And she was like, no, but like we want to have dinner in half an hour.
Mm.
It cooks everything halfway. I was like, oh, yeah.
Did it taste
great.
Okay?
It was amazing.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So maybe you should get one.
Well, I mean, if I want to do that, I'd do the same thing with a pot of boiling water.
Yeah.
But
I'm not telling him what to do, frankly. I only use the microwave once in a blue moon.
I mean, it's when you need it and you can use it. Great.
Tamar Adler's our guest today. Three books so far. The new one in the fall is Feast on Your Life, and we're talking about kind of joy and contentment in the kitchen, and it's been very interesting. I love having you on this show. All right, let's go to Jeff in Albany. Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead, man. Go.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Okay. You were talking about what brings you joy in cooking and stuff, and I really couldn't relate to it until you started talking about grilling.
Yeah,
Ray,
buddy.
And,
yeah.
And I start, and you know, we have a camp, and we have a grill, and I sort of learned how to grill things properly with my meat thermometer.
Yeah.
So I go out there, and I have my adult beverage, my speaker, play my favorite tunes, and I just sit there and watch the stuff go and listen to everybody going on inside and think I'm a lucky guy.
I'm with you there 100%, Jeff. You want to comment, Tamar?
That sounds great. It sounds great. As you were talking, I was feeling it. I was picturing a setting sun and lots of trees and hearing my family in the distance, but like the distance.
Yeah.
And just sitting there with just my fire. Sounds awesome.
800-348-2551. Let's see. We'll go to Clifton Park. Hello, Cindy. You're on.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a quick question. Just why do we wash our eggs in this country?
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert on this. It would be easier for home cooks if we did not wash them, because then we could keep them at room temperature. At some point, it was a decision made at the USDA level. Our national regulations compared to other countries in the world tend toward the conservative, and tend toward the sort of getting rid of any bacteria at any cost, where other cultures understanding that bacteria is a big part of what makes up our food and our bodies have different regulations. But I imagine that given our general American leaning toward the more sort of sanitized environments, we chose to get rid of that membrane rather than keep it.
All right, Cindy, thank you very much for the call. It's funny, we've had several calls about eggs, and I don't know if anybody can afford them these days. Jeez, the prices.
You know where eggs are still the same price they've always been?
Don't give actual prices on public radio, but where?
Farmers markets.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's tough. So many egg chickens are dead, you know?
Yeah, but you still do have a situation where smaller flocks and smaller food economies, inputs coming from closer by and less points of distribution do create less opportunity for infection.
Right. But from a business model standpoint, the profit margin can be so tight for a farmer, especially a small farmer. You think this would be a chance to get a few extra bucks out of it?
I don't think that's how they roll. But, I mean, we'll see. I've noticed that my farmer's market, you know, I've been obviously tracking egg prices like every other, you know.
Could be your next book.
Sentient American. And farmer's market prices are the same. They you know, seemed really expensive to people, right? When egg prices were low, farmer's market prices were like, I would never buy those eggs. Like, I'm not spending $6 a dozen. That's crazy. They're $2.99 at the supermarket. And now it's like, whoa.
The market has
equalized. You can get
them
somewhere for $6 a dozen. Yeah.
And the quality. Mm. All right. Let's go to Bill in Saratoga. Bill, you're on with Tamar Adler.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Tamara. I have a question and a debate between my wife and I regarding a pot roast in a crock pot. She sears the meat before putting it into the crock pot. And my argument is that the flavor isn't going anywhere because the meat's going to be in that crock pot for the next 12 hours or so. So who's right?
First of all, if you think that either Ray or I is going to spend our Valentine's Day getting between you and your wife, Bill.
No, I do that. No, I totally do that.
All right, then I'll let Ray take this one.
I'll tell you what, Bill, she's right, and she thinks you're a fool. No, I don't.
Touché.
I don't want to get between you. I mean, the truth is, you're making something delicious. It's going to be delicious either way. By searing it, you create the Maillard reaction, which is when the combination of proteins and sugars and probably something else on the surface of the meat caramelize, like turn into sugar. That is a flavor that can't be created without direct contact with heat at a certain temperature. So there is more flavor in meat that has been that has gone through the Maillard reaction because it's flavors that can't be generated another way. It's a chemical reaction.
Bill, we're almost out of time here, but I will tell you house.
Go ahead. As usual, my wife is right.
Exactly. My wife is right too. That's the way she does it. We're done here, buddy. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. Okay, Tamar Adler. How do people find out more about what you do, what you've written, the kitchen shrink, et cetera?
Number one is hopefully buying my next book, which comes out in the fall and is called Feast on Your Life.
Yeah.
My weekly newsletter is free, and it is on Substack, and it can be found by just Googling Tamar Adler, The Kitchen Shrink.
Okay.
And every week I answer a culinary query. It's my favorite thing to do. And those also have a really, really wide range. But anything you want to know that I have not addressed in this short hour, I would love to address.
I need you on this show more often. I mean, this is just so much fun. Okay, so the website, once again, is?
The Kitchen Shrink at Substack.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
You got any big plans for Valentine's Day?
This is it. This is my Valentine's Day right now.
You're a cheap date. All right, fair enough. Support comes from Testa's Pantry, Schenectady, celebrating 8 years of procuring olive oils and balsamics from curated producers selected by the Testa family to meet their exacting standards. Testa's Pantry.com. Bodywork Professionals, licensed massage therapist, Albany, Saratoga Springs, Niskayuna. Nick Pavaldi, structural integration practitioner, Rolfer proprietor, 518 Massage, or bodyworkprofessionals.com. And the Devlin Inn and Suites, Main Street, Lake Placid, welcoming families, athletes, and groups to the historic Olympic Village with Adirondack Mountain views and dog-friendly accommodations. TheDevlinNY.com to learn more. All right, that's it. Have a good Valentine's Day. Don't get in any fights. Get some candy and whatnot. We'll see you on Tuesday.